As I thought about what to share this morning, there was a number of things that guided my thoughts. Two of them were two different quotes that I heard this week. The one was a question, and it was quoted by someone else attributing it to Louis Graeber. He asked this question, and maybe he borrowed it from somebody else too, I don't know. But he asked this question. If you were given the choice today whether you could never have been born or have the life that you're given now, which would you choose? I know it's hypothetical because you can't really. But you think about the life that you have right now, the children, the grandchildren, or the not the children, married or not married, the church you're in, the physical health or lack of that you have. If you were able to choose, you know what, I'd just rather not be born, or yes, I embrace the life that I now have, which would it be? And I found it to be a very profound question, something I thought about for a while. Are you satisfied? Do you understand the gift that life is? Or do I understand the gift that life is and the gift that everything is that I have in my life? It's all been given to me from somebody other than myself, given to me by God, planned by God, guided by God. And yet, do I really embrace it? Am I really grateful for it? Am I happy that God has put me right where I am today? Something we should think about. The other quote was this. In this world, there are two kinds of people. Maybe I'll write this up for you. In this world, there are two kinds of people. Givers and takers. And you're going to have to decide which you're going to be. And you may say, how do those two even relate to each other? Well, that's what I was wondering too. And I trust till the end of this message, maybe we can kind of piece these two quotes together. A giver or a taker? You see, something about my perspective of life and what I have in life, who's given it to me, who owns it, will have an enormous impact on whether my life is primarily marked by a person who is this or who is this. A receiver, a sponge, or someone who loves to give and to pour into other people's lives. Let's open with some verses from Luke chapter 19. We're not going to stay here for very long, but I want to point out, lay a couple foundational principles for us first before we go any further. This was a parable that Jesus taught. And I know you know these things, but we need to say them and we need to believe so that we believe them. We need to hear them again and again so we embrace them as truth. Luke chapter 19, let's start reading at verse 11. And as they heard these things, he added and spake a parable because he was nigh to Jerusalem and because They thought that the kingdom of God should immediately appear. So Jesus, in the context of what was going on about him, said, okay, here's a story for you to help sort through some correct thinking. And he said, therefore, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return. And he called his 10 servants and delivered them 10 pounds. And he said unto them, occupy till I come. But his citizens hated him and sent a message after him, saying, we will not have this man to reign over us. And it came to pass that when he was returned, having received the kingdom, that he commanded these servants to be called unto him, to whom he had given the money, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Then came the first, saying, Lord, thy pound hath gained 10 pounds. And he said unto him, well, thou good servant, because thou hast been faithful in a very little, have thou authority over 10 cities. And the second came, saying, Lord, thy pound hath gained 5 pounds. And he said likewise to him, be thou also over 5 cities. And another came, saying, Lord, behold, here is thy pound, which I have kept laid up in a napkin, for I feared thee, because thou art an austere man. Thou takest up that thou layest not down, and reapest that thou didst not sow. And he said unto him, out of thine own mouth will I judge thee, thou wicked servant. Thou knewest I was an austere man, taking up that I laid not down, and reaping that I did not sow. Wherefore then gavest not thou my money into the bank, that at my coming I might have required my own with usury? And he said unto them that stood by, take from him the pound, and give it to him that hath 10 pounds. And they said unto him, Lord, he hath 10 pounds. For I say unto you, that every one which hath shall be given, and from him that hath not, even that he hath shall be taken away from him. But those mine enemies, which would not that I should reign over them, bring hither and slay them before me. And when he had thus spoken, he went before, ascending up to Jerusalem. Now, what does Jesus want us to learn from this story? It's a parable, right? It's something we need to learn from. There is a lot that we could unpack, but this is what I want to lay as a foundation and as a reminder for us. Jesus said in this story that the things that you have, whether it's money or natural ability or developed abilities, the things that you have, maybe it's the children you have or the business that you run or the responsibilities that fall, the abilities and responsibilities that fall in your realm are gifts from God, and we are simply stewards. The title this morning is Circumspect Stewards, and a subtitle could be Takers or Givers. We are stewards. The things that we have are not ours. The house that you own, you do not own. The house at 8585 Oxbow Road that I live in, that my name is on the deed, is not my own. It's not. And when I understand that, and when you understand that, it should change the way we view them. Lord, this is yours. What do you want me to do with it? Who do you want to live at this place? Who do you want to come find a blessing and find a place of refreshment here? How should I develop it? What should I do with it? The car that you drive, the vehicles that are parked out there, may have your name on the title, but they're not yours. They are not yours. They are a gift from God, loaned to you for a period of time, and you and I will give an account of what we do with them. I just found that very sobering. You know this, but I'm reminding you and I'm reminding myself because it really, really does matter. That's the foundation. That's the foundation to the thoughts of the morning here. And there is a system, according to this parable, I don't know how it will work, but in eternity, there is a system of reward and in time. But the things, the way that I handle the gifts that are stewarded to me or that are gifted to me, that are loaned to me, the way that I handle them will be rewarded. There are different levels of reward. Of course, salvation is through Christ. That is the only way into eternity. But I do believe that there is, the Bible speaks of a variety of rewards. And the things that he entrusts us with and the way that we handle them determines something about what that will look like in eternity. Now, turn over to Matthew chapter 26. That was a story, but it was a parable. This is an actual story that happened, and perhaps that was reflecting on an actual story that happened. I'm not sure. But this is a story that happened in the life of Christ. Circumspect stewards. This is a story that happened that gives quite a contrast between givers and takers. You have, on the one hand, a woman who breaks an alabaster box that is costly, and her stewardship was brought into question. Wait a minute. Really? That much? That elaborate? That luxurious? Are you sure? And on the other hand, you have the man who's asking that question. Really? And above and beyond that, you have the one who they're both wrestling over. What is he worth? Let's read this story. Actually, I don't know if we'll take the time to read all of it. I'm going to give you five pretty swift thoughts from this story, and then we're going to have five questions that we want to look at, and I think we'll move through them fairly quickly. But looking over this story, I think you're familiar enough with it. From verses 6 to 10, we have this happening. Jesus is in Bethany, the house of Simon the leper. So he's in somebody's home. This woman comes in. She pours this very precious ointment out while Jesus is eating. And you have this shock. This says when the disciples saw it, John says it was Judas who actually asked the question, to what purpose is this waste? For this ointment might have been sold for much and given to the poor. The first comment I have on this story is that givers are consumed with their objective and not their expense. Givers are consumed with their objective and not with their expense. You see, this woman, did it cost her a year's wages? Well, yeah, it did, apparently. Maybe that was a normal year's wages. Maybe for her it was two or three or four. I don't know. But it wasn't the expense that was the focus. It was the objective. It was Jesus who was worth, right? She was worshiping him, and he was worth it to her. Sometimes worship is thought of as worship. Our worship is guided by what God is worth to us, how big he is, how much we owe him, how much we understand the gift of life and the gift that he's given to us. Givers are consumed with their objective and not their expense. Secondly, in verse 11, Jesus responded and said, "You have the poor always with you, but me ye have not always." The second thing I want to say is that givers realize they're giving to God and not to men. She understood that this was actually something of eternal value. I don't know how much of that she understood. Jesus said she did it for his burial, but she understood that this was not just a mere man walking around giving bread to the poor people. She understood that this was the Son of God who deserved worship. And it gave her this desire or this willingness or this courage to pour out an elaborate gift for him, because she understood that this wasn't just men. This wasn't just ordinary life. There was something going on here beyond that. Number three, givers live for the future and not for the present. In verse 12, it says, she poured out this ointment on my body. She did it for my burial. So she was looking forward. She understood that life was about more than the here and now. And she understood that even though Jesus was here in this room today, that something was about to happen. Again, I don't know what all she understood, but I think that she had a vision of, for sure, that Jesus was more than a mere man, but something was about to happen. And God was using her to prepare hearts for this tremendous gift, this tremendous sacrifice. Number four, givers know they are investing and not wasting. Because Jesus said, wait, it might look like a waste to you, but people are going to talk about this over the whole world. Givers understand that giving is an investment. It is laying up treasures in heaven. It's not just a costly expense for today, but when I give, and I'm not just talking about money. I know this is kind of a material gift, that costly, expensive, monetary gift that we're talking about in this story, but we want to move into relationships too. When I give in relationships, not just out of my pocket, but out of my heart and out of a heart of love where I pour into other people's lives, it's an investment. It's a deposit. It's not a waste of time. It's not a waste of money. It's not a waste of resources. Giving, givers know they are investing. And the fifth thing yet is actually the very next verse, or the next two verses outside of this paragraph or this story. When Judas, immediately after this, asked what question? Do you see it in verse 15? What will ye give me? What will you give me, he says. Takers? I'm sorry, takers are pictured in this question. What will ye give me? They're self-centered. Givers are self-sacrificing. Takers are self-centered. And I wonder, which are you and which am I? If this needle were to move, or if you were to put it where you thought it belonged, maybe it should have two needles. Maybe it should be a needle of where you think you should be and a needle of where you are, where I want to be and where I am. And you may say, I know I said as I thought about this, but how do I really know if I'm a giver or a taker? How do I know what kind of person I am? Maybe it would be better to ask other people. And so I did. I started asking my family, and then that was a little scary. Are you a giver? Are you a taker? Of course, overarching this story, you have Jesus, who is the ultimate giver. He's about to give his own life. This is in preparation for that. It's the events that God has laid in his authority and in his sovereignty, the events that will continue to step right into the sacrifice of his own son for the sins of the world, the ultimate gift. Let me ask you a few questions, maybe to get us thinking. And then I want to think about five different areas where I think we face this. It's probably more than that. But to help us think through at least a number of practical areas in our lives. But think about these questions with me. Do I think more of what I will give or more of what I will get? Do I think more of my comfort or the advancements of his cause or God's kingdom? Do I think more about saving for myself than I do in investing in souls? Do I decide how much I will give by how much I would like to keep? Do I think about the present benefits or the eternal rewards? These are the things that we have to wrestle through, the questions that we will face as we are stewards. And we have to decide by our lives and by our choices, are we going to be circumspect stewards or wise stewards or faithful stewards with the things that God has given to us. Again, these are probably extreme ends of the spectrum. And the truth is that we need there are times in our lives when we need to be takers. I'll just say that now. I don't want to ignore that. This is perhaps focusing on one particular area. But in order for people to give kindness and to give monetary gifts, somebody has to receive them, right? The Bible says it's more blessed to give than to receive. More blessed. But there is a blessing in receiving as well. And there's something that happens on this level when we receive help and when we're humble enough to allow others to speak into our lives. There's something really good that happens there as well. And so I don't want to ignore that in our thoughts this morning. But as I tucked in here between Thanksgiving and between Christmas and thinking about the tremendous gift of God's Son, the tremendous gift that we have coming through another year, and the good things that God's poured into our lives, what am I going to do with that? I thought about it when we gathered on Thanksgiving Day with family, and you start realizing how when you're with people, it matters whether you're a giver or a taker. That affects relationships so much. It affects marriages. It affects parents with children. It affects brotherhood levels here. It affects at work tomorrow. Whether we're giving in our relationships or whether we're a sponge where we're absorbing really, really does matter. So let's think about, as quickly as we can here, five areas where we need to evaluate whether we are givers or takers. Number one, do I worship God to get or to give? Again, we're not just talking about money. I'm talking about worship now in this point. When I gather in this place of worship, am I here to get or to give? When I pray about this Sunday morning worship service, do my prayers reflect an attitude of getting or giving? See, as I thought about that, and I thought about the way that I normally pray, my prayer often does include, Lord, meet our needs. Speak into my heart, okay? That's not wrong, okay? We do need to come here and we need to receive. If I were to preach here this morning, there was nobody to listen and nobody to receive, that would be difficult. We need that. But we also need this willingness to give. Have you prayed, Lord, help me to share in Sunday school class what would be a blessing to those about me? Help me to share a thought that could guide somebody else or answer a question in their life or bless them or challenge them? Have you been excited about the opportunity to have devotions? This is my opportunity to be a giver. I'm going to study. I'm going to pour into it. It's my opportunity to lead the singing or to be the Sunday school superintendent, and to do it cheerfully. It's a mindset, and it's what God is. God is a lavish giver. He pours out grace upon grace, blessing upon blessing, and he does it in abundance. And yet, sometimes we get that turned around and we just want to be. The gifts, well, we see it all through the Bible, right? All the way back in the Old Covenant, God said, but when you get into this land and you receive and you receive and you receive, don't forget me, he said, right? In Malachi, he talked about them robbing God. We received. Oh, but God doesn't really need, he has so much. He doesn't need the little bit that I have, does he? He says that's robbing God. And when you go from the Old Covenant to the New Covenant, you go from a time where there's sacrifices. There's the giving of costly, right? Animals, bringing the best. And then you come to the New Covenant and you say, oh, it's just, we don't have to do that anymore. Yes, we do. It's about a living sacrifice. We give ourselves. We give our lives, we give everything back to God that he's given to us. You could read that in Romans 12, verse 1. The gift we give to God is the gift of our own selves. And so, do we come to worship to just get, or do we come to give? Secondly, do I fellowship to get or to give? When you think about our interaction after church, or our interaction Sunday evening, or around a fellowship meal downstairs, the things that happen among each other, am I focused on getting from those relationships or giving into those relationships? Of course, Galatians talks about not being growing weary in well-doing, bearing one another's burdens. These are calls for us. Acts 20:35 is where we find it's more blessed to give than to receive. It is important that we... Sorry, I jumped a page here. It is important that we, in our fellowship, that we're giving these things. In Acts, this is the verse I wanted. In Acts 2, verse 24, at the beginning of the new church, you'd think, okay, new church, doctrine is what really matters. And it does, right? They continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine, which is wonderful. But it also says, and in fellowship, and in breaking of bread, and in prayers. Fellowship goes hand in hand with that. That's this word koinonia that we talk about. 1 John talks about it. There's a closeness that we have in the body of believers that you don't find anywhere else. But that closeness happens when we are giving, when we're pouring into each other's lives. Hebrews 10, where I guess I'll just read it for you for sake of time. Hebrews 10:23, listen to this. Let us consider one another to provoke unto love and to good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. There's something that should be happening in our fellowship where we stir each other up. We exhort, or we encourage, or inciting each other, or making each other excited about it as we see the day approaching. That's something that needs to be happening on a normal time of fellowship. And we should stop and ask ourselves after we visit with each other after church, was it all about me? Or do I know more about what he or she is going through from the conversations that I had with them? Do I understand what they're going through, to understand what they're struggling with, to understand more of what their needs are and how I can help meet those needs? Those are the things that should happen inside the body of Christ. Number three, do I serve to get or to give? Do I serve to get or to give? Serving is a huge part of church life. Service. And you may say, wait, but if you're serving, that is giving, right? In our human carnal hearts, we can even twist that around. And suddenly the service that we're doing is only to be seen of men. Jesus talked about that, right? Serving to be seen of men. And we can lose the blessing. Of course, we could read about Ananias and Sapphira, we heard about that in devotions this morning. They were serving, but it was to be seen of men, and they not only lost the blessing, but they lost their lives. In 3 John, it talks about Diotrephes, and he loved to have the preeminence. He was a servant in the church, but he left it go to his head, and he wanted the recognition. Oh, you're such a wonderful person. And we look for the pat on the back, and we look for the good job. No. Is the smile of God on your life enough? Or do you need to get this pat on the back from others? Number four, do I work to get or to give? Do I work to get or to give? What does drive me to go to work? This is mostly for the men's side. Ever think about it, how we bring home thousands of dollars in a year's time? For what? What's the purpose? What are we supposed to do with that? And why? What provides the drive to exchange hours and hours of our lives for those thousands of dollars? Well, is it for hoarding? Is it for the American dream? Is it so I can make my life comfy and cozy? The charge or the command in 2 Timothy 6 is to charge them that are rich, that they be not high-minded, nor trust in uncertain riches, but in the living God, who giveth us richly all things to enjoy. He does give them to us to enjoy. But most of that, or much of that enjoyment, should be in giving it back into our children and giving it into our families and our church, where we, through that, we lay up a good foundation against the time to come. He says, we are rich. It is true. This command is for us. God gives these things richly to us, and he wants us to learn to be generous. And the fifth one yet is in relation to our marriages. And I put it this way, do I marry to get or to give? Just want to think about our marriages a little, and we should be reading from Ephesians 5. We don't have, or we're not going to take the time to. Ephesians 5 talks about instructions for husbands. Love your wives. And then he goes to the wives and he says, wives, you need to respect. You need to honor your husbands. Or maybe you could say, if I'm single, do I want to marry to give or to get? How can a marriage increase my opportunities to give and to serve? You've probably heard the story before of the woman who complained to her husband, complained that her husband would never tell her, he would never tell her that he loved her. And so she asked him about it one day, and he said, well, on the day that I married you, I told you that I loved you. And if anything changes, I'll let you know. No, that's not good enough. That there is a giving that needs to happen in relationships, like Christ, who gave himself for the church. That's what Ephesians says. He gave himself. The giving must happen for a marriage relationship to work. And this should be a whole sermon, and I'm only going to give you a couple of minutes. How do we give in a Christ-like manner? And how do I respond when I don't receive the things that I think I should? I was really convicted on this as I thought about it. It is so easy to be a selfish husband. That's what's natural. I think my wife is okay if I give this illustration. Yesterday, I was working in the barn on a number of different projects, and several of them required cleaning up. First, it was working on vehicles, and we were dirty, and then we were butchering, and we needed wash up. But every time I walked over to the sink, I was met with this big, full sink of greenery and branches that are supposed to become a winter decoration. And I could never wash my hands. You know, it would have taken me 1 minute to take that and to put that in a bucket and set it to the side for when it could get arranged. Instead, several times when I went in the house, are you going to take care of that thing in the sink? I can't even wash my hands. You know, that's, and I'm embarrassed to say that, that I should have taken care of it, but that's how easy it is to just be, right, a taker, to want, like I did, I don't deserve to have to clean up before I wash my hands, right? I should, I could talk about this for a while because I'm a needy husband. But somehow I want to call us as marriage partners to be givers, to pour into relationships, to be sacrificial, to not have this, carry around this self-deserving attitude and look down on people when they don't give us what we want. May God help us to reflect the life of Christ who gave himself for the church, for his bride. It's a game changer. Being a giver changes relationships here and into eternity. Are there any practical action steps that you can take this week? There are things I can do. Let's pay attention to our thoughts, our actions, the words that come out of our mouth, the things that bring conflict in our homes and in work and in church. They're probably because, many times because of selfishness and pride, and I'm struggling because I'm not getting what I think that I should. Again, we could, probably would be helpful. Maybe you don't need to say it out loud, but at least to think it this way. Does my wife think that I'm a giver or a taker? Do my children think? based on how I would view my life through their eyes, what do I think about this person here? Do my friends see me as a giver or a taker? Let's not sit in a state of negativity and self-punishment. We could just say, well, I see that from yesterday, I have a real problem here. I guess it's hopeless for me. You know how you change that? By giving. By choosing today that I'm going to be quiet and I'm going to do the thing that's the right thing to do. I'm going to humble myself before God. I'm going to ask Him to give me grace to show the love of Christ in every situation that I face and to give love, to give kindness, to give patience every day, every situation. And it's an outgrowth of a mindset. Going back to the verses we read at the beginning and the question that I asked, it is an outgrowth of how I view the gift of life and the situation that God has placed me in. Why am I here? Am I satisfied to just be who God created me to be? Am I satisfied to be in the home and in the workplace and in the church where He placed me? And if I'm satisfied, am I willing to pour myself into that? And maybe sometimes when I'm not even satisfied, I choose that this is where God placed me, and so I will give all that I can. Be the kind of giver that God is. Give, and it shall be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down and shaken together and running over, shall men give into your bosom. For with the same measure that ye meet withal, it shall be measured to you again. That is the kind of giving that I've experienced from God in my life. That's the kind of giving I've experienced from many of you. Let's be those kind of givers. Pressed down, shaken together, full measure, running over, and God will bless your life. Let's kneel for prayer.